Good afternoon, everyone. Actually, you know, the presentation here today is made by, you know, our staff, and just because, you know, travel restriction and, you know, other, you know, personal reason, you know, she couldn't make it here. So I just representing, you know, on her behalf. So some of you may see, you know, a couple of those slides, you know, one too many times about, you know, the UPHN in different occasions. And please, you know, forgive us if you have seen it in a way too many times. And I hope that, you know, with this presentation, we bring in some actually, you know, lesson learned from an actual implementation of basically a new concept, a new architecture for health information exchange to support public health. So just want to, you know, give you a quick idea of what we have seen is an evolution for health information exchange for public health. In the first diagram you see here, that's how we see, you know, the current, the past, and probably still current data exchange for public health have happened. Other than this is an ugly picture, it, you know, show you that, you know, we have a myriad of, you know, data flow, point-to-point, you know, data connection from, you know, the provider, from the payer, from, you know, physician, connect to each other and report to public health. So not only is uncoordinated, it also provide, you know, it also using many, many different data standard or non-standard to a certain degree. It'd be hard to believe, but even today in New York, we still have, you know, data report to our Medicaid system in a text file format. Okay. Our vital record, you know, report, you know, from New York City to, you know, the Medicaid system is still in a text file format. Very difficult to believe, but that's what exists today. Some of the issue with, you know, this picture is that it have a weak integration. It's very costly. And, you know, the cost, it become a bigger factor every day. One of the issues we have seen with, you know, those kind of, you know, silo system too is that in terms of the cost effective of, you know, the development, implementation, and maintenance of those systems is that, number one, in the good old day when I was still in school, we were taught that usually the cost for software development and maintenance is 80-20, 80% for development and 20 for maintenance. But more and more, I think that, you know, probably the formula should be reversed. It should be reversed to like 20-80. So the issue with, you know, the costly factor of those, you know, silo development is that whenever people develop, you know, an individual system in an individual project, they look at only the cost for the initial development for only that project. And they didn't look at, you know, the big picture of the sum of, you know, the cost for all those individual systems, how much it's going to be. And further, the maintenance of, you know, all those individual silo systems. Okay. Every system designed on their own way, apply their own, you know, data standard or not really standard. And at the end of the day, when we sum it up, you know, the taxpayer is going to cover the bill no matter what. Whether is that you develop, you know, a system for lab laboratory reporting or, you know, notifiable disease, you know, condition reporting, at the end, you know, the taxpayer foot the bill and it sum up. Another issue is a dead end solution to many. We are inheriting a lot of legacy in our system, and the more those systems continue to be, you know, maintained or operate in a silo, the less likely it can be integrated with, you know, other system. And the one thing that nobody can dispute today is that, you know, for public health data exchange, you need better integration on those individual system. There's no path to future interoperability. Everyone agrees that interoperability is needed. But the same thing with, you know, the development of individual system, the cost to enhance individual system by itself to meet the requirement for interoperability standard, either set at the national level or the state level, it's just too much for each individual system, you know, to cover. you know, especially in, you know, this, you know, the current, you know, funding, you know, situation. It increased risk of duplication. The one thing when I put it on the table in New York that I swear that we have the same data element, actually many of them, collected by at least half dozen system or program in one department. And I'm sure that's not, you know, the only issue in New York. I think that it exists everywhere, and I can, well, not publicly, but privately, I can point out the same issue at the federal government, you know, level too. Because obviously, we don't want to offend, you know, our friend in the federal government. it increased, you know, the risk of missing data. The same issue that when you have duplicate data at individual, you know, system, we also have, you know, a kind of adverse risk of missing data because system A think that system B collect that data. And also maybe system B did collect the data that, you know, system A doesn't think that it had to be collect. However, the data collecting system B doesn't meet the requirement for system A. So that's increased the risk meeting. So where we want to go from that current picture? So in New York, the vision is to have the regional health information network to integrate, you know, the information at the local and regional level from all different, you know, provider reporting entities and communicate with, you know, public health through, you know, a new architecture we call Universal Public Health Node. Now, this is a vision, and while promising, the experience we have with the, you know, initial implementation also give us a lot of lessons that we can learn, you know, from it, you know, for the future. So that's what we want to talk, you know, about today. So what is an universal public health node? The one thing I always have to correct, you know, everyone to be clear. The universal public health node is not a software product. It's not, we're not trying to compete with FinaMS. We're not trying to duplicate, you know, the effort, you know, FinaMS neither. It's not a software product. It's a collection of services and operational policy designed to support public health reporting by health information exchange between the RIO and public health agency. And in New York right now, we are in the process of implementing, you know, a statewide health information network that to support, you know, own, you know, health information exchange need. We see the universal public health node as a subset of that architecture to support, you know, the health information exchange for public health. Okay. So the reason that we don't want to make it a software product, but rather design a set of architecture and standard is to allow anyone who will have the capability and have a business need, they can develop, you know, the software solution on their own. Okay, so we, number one, from, you know, a public health or state government perspective, we don't have to have the burden of development and maintenance of the software solution by ourselves. Now, on the other hand, from a vendor or from, you know, reporting entity perspective, they don't have to have, you know, a piece of software sold out their throat, you know, from government, like they only complain. If they want to, you know, develop their own solution, they can just, you know, as long as, you know, their software solution follow the standard we have set forth and follow the operational policies that, you know, we created, then it can communicate with, you know, public health. So the system is based on service-oriented, you know, architecture, implementing through web services, and it's developed as a part of a statewide collaboration process with active participation across, you know, public and private, you know, sector, under the leadership of, you know, the New York State Office of Health Information Technology and Transformation. That's also something that, you know, we depart, you know, from our past, you know, practice. This architecture was not designed by the State Department of Health by itself. It's not, you know, some of us, you know, sitting down in a room and, you know, come up with some crazy architecture. We do it with as a part of, you know, statewide collaboration process So we can ensure that, you know, the reporting entity and the technical vendor not only to provide input into the architecture and, you know, the defined standard, but they actually approve so that, you know, they can ensure that if they want to implement their own technical solution within, you know, this architecture, they can do it. So some of, you know, the overarching architecture principle, you know, for the UPHN. Number one, the nature of New York State is New York State is not a single HIE state. We have multiple HIE, you know, in New York State. And also, the public health reporting is have to be able to support multiple programs in the, both the state and local health department, including New York City Department of Health. So we have to integrate the data reporting across multiple HIE and program, which is a big challenge. The way we are going to, you know, be able to do it is to exchange data using national and state, you know, standard. Standard is the only way we can get through this. We also using collaborative development of technical architecture and implementation. The technical solution that we develop, you know, from this architecture actually, you know, have, you know, a lot of input and contribution from several, you know, vendor and, you know, health information exchange. We also want to enable bidirectional flow of data and information, you know, with this, you know, architecture, including dynamic, you know, querying, you know, capability that, you know, you heard a lot with, you know, the initiative, you know, the health query initiative from ONC, you know, lately. We also want to ensure patient privacy by implement and enforce, you know, privacy and security standard, and also the concept of you require minimum data necessary and using, you know, filter anonymization and aggregation as much as possible. The architecture is aligned with the New York State Health Information Technology Strategic and Operational Plan, and is compliant with not only, you know, the State Health Information Network architecture, but also the national standard for healthcare interoperability. This kind of big picture with, you know, a lot of things that is way far ahead in the vision, so I'm not going to get into a lot of detail here, but it gives you an idea about, you know, the vision for, you know, the UPHN. In the bottom, is you can see that you know, the RIO or the Health Information Exchange, where they integrate, you know, data, you know, from, you know, multiple reporting entity, and then, you know, they would communicate with, you know, public health through what we call the public health enterprise service bus, or the big bus, which correspond to big government. So on the left hand side, you know, arrow is indicate, you know, the service that you to report data to public health, and I would get into more, you know, info detail into those service. The other side is the potential, is not in operation right now, but it's a potential services to provide back information to the provider and the reporting entity to health information exchange. For example, provider directory, information about provider, public health knowledge base, you know, like, you know, KD definition, public health notification, alert and notification about, you know, outbreak and whatnot. And the data when it report will be, you know, integrated through what we call a UPHN data integration engine. So it can provide data to multiple, you know, program. For example, you know, hospital resource utilization surveillance, immunization registry, you know, infectious disease surveillance. So in version one services, as I mentioned, we mainly focus on reporting data to public health. We have five, you know, services. The first service is a patient query, as to allow the state and local health agency to query and receive, you know, responses for data about individual patient based on specific, you know, parameter. Like, for example, you know, patients that, you know, have, you know, diagnosis code, ICD-9 code, you know, equal 495, or have, you know, specific chip complaint, you know, or, you know, specific demographic parameter. The data would come back in the standard CCD-C32 medical summary, you know, format. Line list query, which is allow the state and local health department to request and receive anonymized patient level data for specific disease condition. This service was developed, you know, based on the HISP biosurveillance, you know, specification. So the data coming back is, you know, the HISP biosurveillance minimum data set. Anonymization re-identification. The data we receive through the Liley query would come with, you know, a linker, so that although the data is anonymized, you can use a re-identification service to enable, you know, to identify data as needed for public health investigation of specific case. Analytic query. Now, this is something that, you know, I have to give, you know, the credit, you know, to, you know, Fazad. This is something that Dr. Fazad, you know, when he was a deputy commissioner or assistant commissioner of New York City Department of Health, he was the one who have, you know, set the vision for us to develop this analytic query, which is very similar to the current, you know, health query initiative from ONC, to allow state and local health agency to receive data based on predefined query for count of specific disease condition instead of receive, you know, individual level, you know, data. Hospital resources is allow the state local health agency to receive hospital resources data, like number of beds available, number of patients admitted to hospital. So, because, you know, the implementation of the UPHN is not based on a specific software solution, it's based on standard and architecture. The only way we can get it work, because everyone can develop their own technical solution, we have to implement, you know, a technical testing and certification process that including an eco test that, you know, allow, you know, anyone who implements the solution can test, you know, the communication and security with, you know, the State Department of Health, and, you know, functional testing that, you know, using a pre-populated sample data set. We also implement system capability testing, so we can identify, you know, the baseline, you know, time for communication of query, you know, responses to ensure that we can, you know, query and receive the data in a, you know, timely manner. So we have, you know, have three RIO that have implemented, you know, the RIO, the UPHN version 1 in production and gone through the technical testing certification process, you know, last fall. And one lesson we learned from this process is that, well, the reality is far away from what we envision. All of them encounter with, you know, some hurdle in the, with the process. Some of that, you know, listed here, miscommunication with regard to terminology. Well, funny thing, everyone understand, you know, the same piece of paper a different way. Lack of understanding about the type of data collected and aggregated by the RIO. The one thing that with the nature of, you know, the RIO and health information exchange, their main business, you know, goal is clinical data exchange. Now, why it is, you know, closely related to public health reporting, is it not the same? So, frankly, there's a lack of, you know, understanding about public health reporting requirement from the RIO and HIE staff, and that, you know, lead to some of, you know, the hurdle we have to go through with the data integration. The lack of understanding of how the data are collected. This is an architecture that we don't dictate how the RIO or the health information exchange implementing their own infrastructure. That leads to, you know, an issue that everyone have their own independent technical infrastructure, you know, data structure, and that lead to a lot of issue about how they aggregate data to report to, you know, the to public health. Privacy concern. A lot of, you know, also the same thing, because the main, you know, business for, you know, RIO or health information exchange is exchange data for clinical purpose. They understand and interpret, you know, HIPAA rule is for clinical care. Sometimes they don't understand about the exemption for public health reporting. And that's, you know, the specification we design is, I have to admit, is vague. This is the first time we design specification for somebody else to develop, you know, the software. And we learned the lesson is that we have to be very detailed, very specific, if you want them to develop, you know, a technical solution exactly as we want. Live data does not equal pre-populated neural data. Well, that's a very that's a lesson which we should learn, you know, a long time ago. But the reality is that when you plug, you know, into live system, there's own way thing that you would never envision, you know, during, you know, the planning, you know, process. Some of, you know, detail in terms of terminology that can be, like, for example, the count of HL7 segment location. Does it start with 0 or 1? Missing value are expected to be returned or in not equal to query rather than excluded. The problem is that when we design, you know, the specification, we have all the input and the representation from the health information exchange and, you know, the vendor. However, those guys are not the same guy who actually developed the software and operated. And there's, you know, a lot of, you know, lack of communication even within the vendor or, you know, the HRE, you know, themselves. So what they agree in terms of the technical design or the specification doesn't translate into the operational part. Well, this check date does not only equal that date. That's another example we got. Data formatting expectation. For example, ICE9 code, believe or not, every HRE, and I have to say that, you know, a lot of hospitals implement something as simple as actually ICD-9 code different, with or without decimal, leading zero. And, you know, I also have to admit this, that I think that, you know, our RIO and HIE, because they are in a very early stage of development, they don't have enough experience to handle, you know, the data mapping, data integration. Also, some of them using clinical data repository, some of them using a strictly pass-through mechanism. So some of the issue we have, some RIO, some HIE pack, you know, the original HL7 data they receive from the data sort and, you know, store in the repository. Some just simply store the HL7 message and pass, you know, through to set the path on how it is. And that lead to, you know, a lot of discrepancy in the data we receive. Another example, what happened to record when patient class changed from emergency to inpatient? And how to derive the emergency visit that, you know, transition into inpatient admission? I was teaching, you know, medical informatics in, you know, in a local university in Omni, and more of my students are a physician or nurses in, you know, local, you know, hospital. And I probably can spend, you know, the whole day, you know, to talk to you about some, you know, horrible stories they tell me about the discrepancy in terms of the data between, you know, own cap different system. For example, syndromic, you know, surveillance. A lot of people, including me, have only thought that that is, you know, can be as simple as an IDT data stream. But the reality is not. In some hospitals, the data can also be derived from, you know, the nerve triad, you know, system. Some may not. Some hospitals have their own ED registration system separate from the hospital IDT data stream. So the lesson we learned is there's a lot of discrepancy from, you know, hospital to hospital that, you know, the HIE need to do a better job, you know, to handle those discrepancy. Privacy concern. You know, certain RIO, they become, you know, they follow, they strictly interpret HIPAA rule. They obscure, you know, the state and zip code and date of birth. Or they exclude, you know, any patient that, you know, older less than 89 year day of birth removed. If, you know, a patient older than 89 years, complete date of birth removed. And of course, we have to correct it because we have, you know, public health exemption in HIPAA. But it's just, you know, the reality is that, you know, many of, you know, the RIO and HRI don't have, you know, a complete understanding about public health reporting requirement. So we after, you know, we communicate and address, you know, their specific, you know, HIPAA concern and the public health exemption, we rezone, you know, their concern. Messaging and technical specification chain. One of the biggest, you know, issue we have is with treating facility. we follow the current HL7 2.x standard for biosurveillance, there's only one sending facility field. And a lot of Rio, of course, they consider themselves as a sending facility. So they put their ID in there. But as a matter of fact, what we really need to know is we do need to know the cheating facility, the original hospital or facility or the provider the patient cheated. So the specification have to address that, and I'm very glad that it have been addressed in the NUIT syndromic surveillance specification. Count location within the HL7 segment may be determined. Descript text must matching coding example more closely, because we've seen some example that and probably the experience is that sometimes the text description of the diagnosis is filled in by a completely different people who determine the ICNA code. Own hospital have those professional coder, and like it or not, some of the professional coder, they have no medical background at all. So sometimes they interpret the text description completely different from what is meant. Understanding the difference between the patient query, legitimate time frame, and the likely query, which is one message per patient per visit, and the implementation of our query window. The query is a good mechanism to get the data, get the response data based on specific request. But if you don't define your request correctly, you're gonna get a completely wrong data. Repopulated versus live data. When we go through the technical testing, everything work well with the pre-populated data, but we still have issue with inability to load message with incorrect or unused IC9 code, and the pre-populated doesn't reflect the reality of live data transmission. So this is an absolutely necessary step that even after we have to have, even after the system go into production, before the data can be accepted for production use, we have to have more data testing and certification with live data. It's going to be time consuming and complicated, but I think that it's unavoidable. And that's all I have today, and I keep my promise to give Jim as much time as he wants for his presentation. Any question? Are we doing question right now? Any question? What's that? I can tell you that because our original architecture we designed according to the biosurveillance specification. Then it covers ambulatory data, but based on what we have seen so far, the quality is not that good. And the HIE is still slow in terms of integrating ambulatory data into their system. Yes?
I have a concept
of the big bus. Now, where does the big bus reside? Who maintains it? The big bus is maintained by the State Department of Health. Correct. But it's open to the outside. It's open to all the health information exchange. So basically it's the middle integration point between the reporting entity data coming in and the back end system of our program who receive the data.
So the big bus connects to all three.
Correct. Yes. Yes. I think that's two sides of it. The issue of miscoding, intentionally or unintentionally in building system, that's an issue that, you know, I don't think that any EMR implementation is going to be able to resolve it, because, you know, frankly, nobody going to admit it, but every hospital in their billing system, when they quote, you know, the bill, they would always quote it to the most expensive coding. Right. So, and also that goes to an issue that, you know, why we think that medical record provide more accurate information than billing data. But even with medical record, I have seen with my own eye about hospital when they have, you know, the coder, you know, walking by and, you know, coding things like that. It's also have a human factor in there. No matter how much you train people, the coder is human. And right now in the hospital, and they're moving toward a lot of, you know, 12-hour shift, by the end of the shift, if I'm the coder, I don't know if I can still keep, you know, my brain working, you know, straight. I can tell you that. So some of those issues, you know, still exist.
But NLP can't solve it, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, many people have tried to develop text mining software for automated coding, but I haven't seen anything that, you know, really, you know, can say that it's going to replace, you know, the human coding system. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, EMRs are progressing in that direction. I don't know, like, the hospitals are much more complicated because you may have 50 diagnoses for one patient by the time they get discharged. It's much more complicated than, at least on the outpatient setting, you know, like Epic and e-clinical work, you know, a lot of them now, like, we just practically turn it on or turn it off, depending on, you know, but at least the last practice I worked at, I had to choose one of the four.
Right. And, you know, the one thing, I'm sorry, I'll get right back to you. The one thing I want to say is that I hate to say it, but I blame the healthcare industry or the medical system in this country for those non-standard, you know, coding. And I don't know if it's, you know, a disadvantage or what. But, you know, my background, actually, the funny thing that, you know, the medical training in Asia is heavily influenced by the European, you know, system. And I did my last semester in France. And for those systems, everything is very standard. You were trained to do everything exactly the same way. If you have asthma, you present this symptom, it's 495. Or even procedure, you're supposed to follow exactly everywhere. But here in this country, you know that every hospital has their own flow. They have their own clinical flow. They have their own business practice. So it's very difficult. I have seen that, you know, similar system implement, and, you know, the physician, they basically have a revolt because they think that, you know, it's tied their hand. It dictates, you know, their interpretation of their diagnosis. Yes. Yeah, and I can give you something from my own experience. You know, when September 11, actually, I was in, you know, the command center in, you know, nearby New York City. university, and we prepare for the worst scenario. But you know, after that, the one thing we say to ourselves is that we're lucky that there's a lot of casualty, but there's not a lot of people admitted to hospital because we don't know how we can handle the surge. Everyone prepared for it, but I don't know how. But it also goes to a point that actually the biggest problem we have with right after September 11, people couldn't locate their missing relative. They couldn't. It's just as simple. They're not asking for them. They just want to know if my daughter, my sister went to this hospital, that hospital. And it has been, a project that we have been working on since September 11, 2001. And since today's 2011, we still don't have that system in place to just locate, a patient where, they show up in a hospital. Okay. So the standard, I believe that, for emergency preparedness, there's two issues, three issues involved. Number one, from a policy perspective, with EHR implementation, everything requires consent. So the consent policy have to have appropriate, exclusion or exemption for emergency situation. That's number one. Number two is that the integration of ambulatory care system is absolutely, critical to do that. You're not going to wait. A couple of years back, we also did, a project, on, burn patient, coordination across the state. And people in the ED, they just told us, finally, is that doesn't matter how much money you give us, how much, fancy technology you're going to put in here. When, if there's a big incident, nobody have time to enter the data. Own hand is going to be on patient care. So actually, they feel that, the may not be most accurate, but more timely sort of data is ambulatory care and EMS. Because that when they hand over the patient as the ED, actually they have a lot more time on their hand to report the data other than the people in the ED who more care, busy, taking care of the patient. If no more questions, thank you.